is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. A new report was published this month that looks at how states are dealing with the dangerous waste produced during shale gas development. Not well, according to the report. Glennis Board has the story.
Toxic or hazardous waste is any liquid or solid material that can cause death, injury, or birth defects to exposed living creatures. The Environmental Protection Agency regulates the disposal of these materials. Special precautions and facilities are designated to minimize any possible risks. Such wastes include things that may contain heavy metals, chemicals, dangerous pathogens, radiation, or other toxins. Horizontal drilling produces both liquid and solid waste streams, which can contain heavy metals, dangerous chemicals, salts, and radiation. But you will never hear it referred to as hazardous by anyone officially.
So generally, any waste that's hazardous, meaning it meets certain criteria of toxicity, has to abide by the federal hazardous waste laws, except the oil and gas industry is exempt from that federal law.
Amy Mall is a senior policy analyst with the Natural Resources Defense Council. Mall explains that 30 years ago, the EPA exempted oil and gas waste from the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, or RCRA.
So right now, oil and gas waste, regardless of how toxic it is, can be treated like normal household waste in many places in the country. If there's oil and gas waste being generated in their community, being transported through their community, being stored in their community, or being disposed of in their community, the rules are just not there to protect them from the dangers of toxic waste.
Earthworks is a nonprofit based out of Washington, D.C., concerned with the adverse impacts of mineral and energy development. The organization just released a report that examines the subject of oil and gas waste management. The lead author, Nadia Steinzer, explains that the EPA didn't exempt the industry because the waste wasn't considered a threat, but because state regulation of this waste at the time was considered adequate. Of course, this was a couple of decades before the horizontal gas drilling boom.
Part of the deal that was struck at the time when the exemption was granted under the Resource Conservation Recovery Act was that the states would take care of it and the federal government didn't need to get involved.
Steinzer and her colleagues decided to see what they could learn about waste practices in West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and New York, where Marcellus and Utica shale gas are being developed. And it's not a glowing report.
We were pretty amazed when we started digging around and saying, okay, what are these four states in the Marcellus and Utica shale region doing?
She says states are well behind the curve in adapting to the natural gas boom. Good characterizations of the waste is incomplete, according to a 2014 study that's cited, and not much information is available about where the waste is coming from, going to, or how it gets there. West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection officials say most information that does exist about oil and gas production and waste disposal procedures is available online. What information isn't public can be accessed with a fee and a Freedom of Information Act request. DEP spokesperson Kelly Gillenwater says her agency is going above and beyond what's required by law to make information more accessible. They're currently working on a project to digitize and make public the information they collect. She says, however, that project is in the early stages, and a time frame for completion doesn't exist yet. Steinzer's report argues that states don't require enough information and often rely on operators to self-report in good faith. The Earthworks report cites a 2013 study that says nearly half of all liquid oil and gas waste is shipped out of state, and the remainder is injected underground. But Amy Mall from NRDC says rules for injection wells everywhere are also in need of attention.
And we think the rules for those disposal wells need to be much stronger than they are now, because those disposal wells are not designed to handle toxic waste.
Another major concern is that a lot of this waste is going into our municipal landfills. These waste facilities were just never designed to handle waste that may even be radioactive in content.
Steinzer does credit West Virginia for taking some steps towards addressing the solid waste problems in the state. Municipal landfills do accept waste, even though it's largely uncharacterized. West Virginia lawmakers put requirements in place during a special session in 2014 that drill cuttings had to be held in storage cells in landfills separate from standard municipal waste. The DEP is also working with Marshall University to study the leachate from those facilities. Results from that study are scheduled to be presented to the legislature sometime this year. West Virginia University is also teaming up with the Department of Energy to better characterize waste streams from two Marcellus wells in Morgantown. Drilling there is supposed to begin in November. One other thing West Virginia may have going for it is a small office within the DEP, the Environmental Advocate Office.
The Advocate Office really grew out of DEP's recognizing that there's a growing environmental awareness in the public and that citizens want to be part of the conversation.
John King is an environmental resource analyst within the Advocate Office.
And more important than that, DEP recognizes that public participation is essential to environmental protection.
King fields many calls from citizens concerned about oil and gas waste management, as well as other issues related to gas development. While it may not be the responsibility of members of the public to be the boots on the ground for the DEP, King says protecting state resources and the public health may nonetheless require participation and investment of communities throughout the state. His office is interested in facilitating better communication between his agency, industry, and community stakeholders. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Glynis Board in Morgantown.
This is West Virginia Morning at 7:50. Partly sunny today, but there is a chance of some rain and thunderstorms moving in this afternoon. Highs will be in the 70s. Rain and thunderstorms in our forecast for tonight with lows in the 50s. Rain Tuesday morning becoming partly sunny. Highs tomorrow in the 60s and 70s.
Call 1-800-RADIO-87. That's 1-800-723-4687 to pledge your support to West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Among the many higher education budget cuts announced this year was a unique program at Marshall University that only those who needed the services know about. Clark Davis has more about budget cuts to the Luke Lee Listening Language Learning Lab.
The little pie. Mother Brown Bear had six little bears.
That's Clara Johnson. She's in kindergarten now. But before that, she learned to understand what she was hearing and how to speak by taking part in the Luke Lee Listening and Language Learning Lab at Marshall. The L Lab, as it's known for short, allows hearing impaired children who wear hearing aids or have cochlear implants to learn how to listen and speak. Clara's mom, Amanda, says she doesn't know where their family would be without the L Lab.
Pie and one little pie. Little bear, one ran to do his work.
I think it would be one of two ways, and that would be we would either be with an interpreter and the whole family would be learning sign language along with trying to assist with a speech, or we would have moved out of state to find another program like this to support her language development.
Clara completed preschool at the L and now pays a visit just twice a week for hour-long sessions to continue to learn and track her development as she progresses through regular kindergarten classes with her twin sister. But Clara isn't the only member of the Johnson family who has needed the lab. Amanda Johnson's three-year-old daughter, Kristen, is now on the preschool program. She doesn't have cochlear implants like her sister yet, but only uses hearing aids. When Amanda found out the L Lab's budget was one of the many things within higher education in the state to receive less money than it requested, she was worried.
Feel very sad. I feel like they need to come and see the program for themselves to get an idea of what they're really doing. Are they trying to not to have these children be contributing adults to society? I don't understand it.
Of a rectangle. And a rectangle has four sides. A rectangle has four sides. A rectangle has four sides. Two are long and two are short. A rectangle has four sides. All right.
Got a paper?
Oh, do you want a piece of paper?
Yeah, paper.
Jody Cottrell is the program director of the IL. She's the first listening and spoken language specialist in the state, and thus the program she runs is the only of its kind in West Virginia. She says when she heard that the center only received $105,000 of its requested $175,000, she was distraught.
Oh, I was devastated. I mean, I was shocked and I was angry. And my big thing is just frustration because I don't think he knows what he's cutting. I mean, I truly don't think he realizes the value that this program has had.
Paper. You can have paper. All right.
The he that Cottrell speaks of is Governor Earl Ray Tomlin. He had the final say on cuts to the program that sits on the third floor of Smith Hall at Marshall. After making it through the House and Senate without cuts, Tomlin made line item cuts in his budget vetoes that included the cut to the lab. Cottrell says she understands it wasn't that the lab was targeted. It just falls under the Higher Education Policy Commission special resource funding. Cottrell and the others that work at the facility are still optimistic because a study resolution was passed that will allow the legislature to look at the program again during the special session. The study resolution will look at whether to provide the program with the full amount of money and whether to expand it into other areas of the state, which is something that Cottrell was looking into before hearing about the cuts.
We serve several kids around the state. I mean, I have kids from Parkersburg. I have a child I see through Skype, through distance technology therapy that lives in Clarksburg. We've had children from Beckley Drive and have been in preschool. So we do have kids from other states, but most kids don't have access to us because we're here. And our goal is to be in all different areas of the state.
In the meantime, while Cottrell and the parents of the program hope for future funding, Marshall University has agreed to help fund the program for the next year, covering the $70,000 that's needed to fill out the budget. Cottrell and parents like Katie Counts, whose 3-year-old daughter Kaylin is part of the preschool program, are grateful that Marshall is helping out. But Counts says she's still worried about what it all means.
I feel like it'll work out just because I want it to work out, but as far as the logistics of it, I have no idea. I mean, I don't know what to ask for. I don't know, you know, what our goal is now. You know, who do we go to? How do we make it work? I'm kind of lost.
Count says it's all she knows for her daughter, Kaylin.
It has been invaluable. Basically, not only has it taught her so much, but I feel like it's a teaching tool for me as well as far as how to carry on therapy at home. It's a way of life.
Goodbye, Kaylin. Goodbye, Kaylin. It's time for you to go.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Clark Davis in Huntington.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.